What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
August is a powerful month for Black folks. From the anniversary of the Haitian Revolution that took place today, 234 years ago, to the Watts Uprising, August 11th to August 15th, 1965, so many more dates, not enough time to get through them all. It is also the time when many of us, or some of us, I don't know, many of the folks I know, commemorate Black August's birth to the American concentration camps in 1979. Joining us to discuss the history and the present is my brother, my comrade, freedom fighter, journalist, Kalonji Jamachanga, author of the best-selling book, How to Build a People's Army, and organizer of thepeoplesarmy.org. He's also co-producer of the documentary Organizing is the New Cool, founder and partner of Black Power Media, and lately, though he ain't tell me about it, I had to see about it, like, on his Facebook page and KPFA's website. He's a KPFA stand-in host for Hard Knock Radio and DVD. You everywhere, my G. What's happening? Good morning.
Hey, man, you know I'm alive on arrival trying to be as cool as my sister Kat Brooks. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. You all over the place. I'm living vicariously through you and all the places you're going to have conversations like the one we're going to have this morning. But first of all, congratulations, my G, on your daughter's wedding.
Yes, thank you so much.
Man, the video you all dancing is just like it's heartstring tugging. I was like, wow.
Hey, I'm the worst dancer on the planet. I admit it. You know what I'm saying? Instead of Fred Astaire, I'm like, Fred don't care. You
know? It didn't matter. The love beaming out of your daddy eyes for your daughter was just so beautiful, beautiful to see. And then I thought, well, damn, we're getting old. Babies are getting married. What the hell is happening? What is happening?
You got to get your pronouns right. We ain't getting old. I don't know what you're talking about.
Fair enough. I know you study all the time. You're one of those folks that actually do what you're supposed to do. Curiosity, what you reading this August?
What am I reading this August? Right now, I'm on Blood in My Eye, of course. You know what I mean? Always got to do the refresher course. Mm-hmm. And, of course, today is the assassination of Field Marshal George Jackson. So, you know, I try to keep him in the mix, you know?
And we're going to talk about the Fleet Days. We'll spend some extra time on today's date. I'm just going to open the floor to you, Kalonji. If you were going to get, because I think this is really important. You saw I did a post, because I do. I think, you know, whenever things get really bad, I got to watch my mouth when it comes to you. I start to want to cuss. Whenever things get really bad, right, and Negroes feel like their back is up against the wall, they start to look at what they, you know, before considered radical or the more out there tradition, right, the less mainstream stuff. And so I have seen an uptick of Black folks saying things like Happy Black August. But I'm getting mad at them because they're trying to find a way in. I had to tell her sister Tandy when she did a post, like, don't say that. I was like, but you got to tell people why. Yeah.
Right.
So I want to provide this opportunity for you. Like, if you were going to say this is, you got a young brother or sister in front of you and they're like, what is the history of Black August? Give me a history lesson. What would you say? Feel free to take your time here.
Cool. Black August is, of course, about resistance. When you say, as you mentioned, someone saying about not saying Happy Black August, it is a time of remembrance. It is a time when brothers were martyred. Black August begins with begin 1 year after the assassination, the state-sponsored assassination of Qatari Golden, San Quentin, brothers and sisters, brothers behind the wall, brothers and sisters outside of the gates of San Quentin, commemorated Black August the first year in 1979. And so it began after a year after, as I mentioned, Qatari Golden ran into or was pushed into some type of pipe sticking out of the San Quentin Adjustment Center while he was playing football in the yard. The state, long story short, they decided that they would allow him to suffer. They took him to the infirmary first, kept him at the infirmary for a number of hours. You know, they claimed that they didn't have adequate security and personnel to take him to a local hospital where he can get treatment. They stalled it out, and finally they took him to a hospital where he got a head scan. They held him there for a while, took him to another hospital where he made his transition. He was a leader in the Black prison movement after Field Marshal George Jackson. You know, they had made all types of attempts to have them taken out by other inmates, have them, you know, get trumped up charges on him, so on and so forth. But none of that was successful. He was a man of strength. He was a man of courage. He's a man of standard. And so, you know, much like Field Marshal George Jackson and other brothers behind the wall, he made efforts to, you know, be on the right side of the barricades. So we say that he was assassinated because of the medical neglect, you know, but the origins of Black August would go back, stating to W.L. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards, and Alvin Juggs Miller being shot on the yard at Soledad when they got into it with some Aryans, and a marksman, correctional officer, Opie Miller, decided to open fire on those brothers, and you know, they were left on the yard to bleed to death. W.L. Nolan was shot in the heart. I believe he died instantly. The other two brothers, you know, they were left to bleed out. And there were inmates attempting to bring them into the jail, into the prison, but they were met with threats of gunfire as well. So these brothers were left to bleed out. That happened on January 13th, 1970. Now we commemorate these brothers' deaths or assassinations on August 13th because of the fact that W.L. Nolan was a partner of Field Marshal George Jackson in the foundings of the Black Guerrilla Family, which started off as a study group, to my understanding. And, you know, so, of course, you know, we keep him in the midst. A few days after that, of course, you know, as history tells us, there's a prison guard thrown off a tier inside of the prison, and, you know, the quote-unquote Soledad brothers, which was George Jackson, Fleet Drumgo, and my mind is escaping me right now, one other brother, it'll come to me in a second. But anyway, they were known as the Soledad brothers, and, you know, they went through a number of different trials or whatever, and the following year on... Later on that year, of course, we know about Jonathan Jackson, who went inside the Marin County Courthouse, took hostages, and basically a judge was killed along with a couple other folks. William Christmas, Michelle McGee was there. He went on to serve 67 years. Of course, this is when Angela Davis caught her charges for providing, quote unquote, having the weapons that were brought into the Marin County Courthouse. They were registered in her name, so she became a fugitive during that time. I know I'm speed talking, so forgive me. But basically, when we talk about these brothers, and of course, 1 year later, George Jackson was assassinated on August 21st, which is, you know, would be commemorated today, August 21st, 1971. I'm saying all that to say that Black August is about martyred and martyred political prisoners, and also prisoners who were killed in combat, and some who are still languishing in these gulags during the 70s. And of course, we hear so many people talk about, you know, Black August in a celebratory mode. They talk about Black August as if it's some type of, you know, party or event. We've seen all types of different angles thrown on Black August. We've seen Black August barbecues. We've seen queer Black August. We've seen all types of different things. But regardless of what you think it is or what you would like it to be, the fact is it's about those martyred political prisoners. Black August is about political prisoners, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? There's no remixes to it. I know it's a lot of different things that took place in during the month of August. We know that the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey was born. We know that Chairman Fred Hampton was born. We know that the Haitian Revolution, and so on and so forth. We can keep on going on, Mike Brown, et cetera, right? But none of that has anything to do with Black August. Black August is about these brothers who were assassinated behind the walls, killed in combat, and those who were, you know, many who are still in prison, who were nameless to a great extent. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what I would say. Forgive me, I'm on the road, so if I sound like I'm skipping over anything, anyone that's listening that may have missed anything, you can go to thepeoplesarmy.org and it'll have a more thorough layout. So I just wanted to say that.
I'm just about to say, they could just Google your name and there's a bazillion interviews that'll come up, so, some of which I have been forwarding to people as study material to keep it 100 with you.
I appreciate it.
Kalandi, how do you, because I think this word political prisoner gets thrown around a lot. How do you define political prisoner? There's some folks that would say all of our incarcerated folks are political prisoners because the job of the American carceral system is to cage the revolution, and it's a political act on their part to disappear us and our folks behind bars. When you say political prisoner, who are you talking about?
When I say political prisoner, and I'm so happy that you asked that question because of the fact that there are, like you said, so many definitions, so many people that have their own different terms of reality. The political prisoner term, or excuse me, definition that I've adopted came from our close comrade, OG Shaka, who is the historian for the Black August Organizers Committee out of Los Angeles. So we decide to define political prisoner as someone who is targeted or imprisoned because of their political actions, affiliations, and/or beliefs. We say a political prisoner is also a person who, while in prison, takes up and maintain political struggle. Of course, folks like George Jackson, we talk about him as a political prisoner. We talk about Malcolm X as a political prisoner, so on and so forth. These are brothers who went in. They weren't political, but they were politicized, and they learned, and in the case of George Jackson, taught himself a bastardized form of martial arts, studied everything he could, put together a study group, so on and so forth, fasted, et cetera, and came out a warrior. Now, it's important to mention, because you said something about a flea date earlier, and I think that I've seen different folks talk about what they theorize a flea date as. A flea date is the day that, again, August 1st would be the day that it is the day that brothers were martyred behind the wall. It's a day that we fast for 24 hours. Of course, during Black August, we fast from sunup to sundown. But during these flea dates, they're floor flea dates, we fast for 24 hours. And so it's called a flea date because if you read the book, The War of the Flea, it was a book put together by Robert Tabor back in 1965, and it analyzes the theory and practice of guerrilla warfare. So, the central idea is guerrilla fighters are like fleas, and the much larger, more powerful military enemy is the dog. You know what I mean? So the flea is the guerrilla. And as you know, a flea is small, it's agile, it's difficult to pin down. It uses hit and run tactics, ambushes, sabotages, so on and so forth. So that's why we say flea date. So these are the day of the gorilla. Okay. I point that out to say again that there are four flea dates, and the first flea date would be August 1st, which is the death of Kotari Hakoden. The second flea date would be August 7th, the day that Jonathan Jackson, William Christmas, and James McClain lost their lives inside outside the Marin County Courthouse. Of course, Judge Harold Haley was killed as well. So that would be the second flea day. The third flea day is the day that W.R. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards, and Alvin Juggs Miller lost their lives on the Soledad Prison Yard. That's August 13th. And today is the final flea day, which is August 21st, which August 21st, 1971, 29-year-old Field Marshal George Jackson was killed in combat in the San Quentin prison by San Quentin prison guards when they accused him of smuggling smuggling a pistol into the prison after a visit with his attorney. So I wanted to point it out because so many people I've seen that made up all types of things. You say flea means, just so many different things, but this is where the concept of the flea comes from.
Well, today is August 21st, and so I do want to spend some time talking about Field Marshal George Jackson. One of the things that I've more recently sat with is, when the state incarcerated him literally for what, under $100 of supposed theft, little did they know that the ultimate outcome would be this revolutionary that would be memorialized, commemorated, inspire generations of revolutionaries to follow.
Yeah, so I was kind of tongue twisted a little earlier. I mentioned the Soledad Brothers and I forgot John Clichette. So the Soledad Brothers, just to, you know, before I get down, is George Jackson, Fleetwood Drum Go, and John Clichette. They were known as the Soledad Brothers. And of course, they were accused for and charged for retaliation when it came to the death of the prison guard after W.L. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards, and Alvin Miller were killed on the yard. Okay, so George Jackson, of course, as you mentioned, was arrested at age 18, and he was serving time for and sentenced to 1 year to life, 1 year to life in prison for allegedly robbing a gas station of $70 or $71. As I mentioned, he was a close comrade of W.L. Nolan, and he was well on his way to becoming a recognized writer, cultural icon, freedom fighter, etc. And basically, you know, he after these particular murders, he ended up writing a book called Soledad Brothers. And, you know, he released his first book, Soledad Brothers, The Prison Letters of George Jackson. And, of course, he was thrust into international limelight.
Oh, okay.
And so that was what ended up taking place. I'm sorry, I'm with family, so, you know, if I sound like I'm all over the place. Again, he was thrust into international limelight 1 year later. I mean, he and as you mentioned, you said that he was a brother that came in and the state didn't realize that they were creating a monster, because when he was sentenced to that, from that 1 to 70 year sentence, his attorney had convinced him that in taking that particular sentence, he might possibly be out in a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
But as he was politicized and as he studied and as he learned what the state was, he dove into the politics of liberation. And there was a spark of energy. Many people talk about Malcolm, but to me, George Jackson was like the next level of a Malcolm.
Mm.
He was Malcolm if Malcolm didn't get out. If Malcolm would have ran into a more revolutionary organization, no disrespect to the Nation of Islam, but an organization that was talking about armed struggle. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So here it is, George Jackson, a brother who was clear about the politics of liberation. He was clear about what America meant, that America was a larger prison, that America, that the United States was the place where it was 5% of the world population, but controlled 25% of the resources, 25% of all inmates on the planet were housed inside of the United States. So George Jackson understood that. And so he continued to study, to train, so on and so forth. And, you know, about a week before he was assassinated, he sent a manuscript out for a book that we know as Blood in My Eye. And it was kind of, you know, extension of the prison letters, so on and so forth. And, you know, the rest was history. So George Jackson, to me, was the focal motto. He was if there was a such thing as a revolutionary in modern times, he would be the closest to it.
You're going to have to blow out focal motto for my listeners, because I know not everybody don't know what that means.
Yeah, focal motto, the leader, the battery, the motor, the engine behind, you know, our people's liberation struggle, our movement. That's how I would take that.
Kalonji, we're in a particular political moment, and I don't think folks like us are surprised at this political moment. I think that folks like us have been like, yeah, this is a natural progression of the beast that we've been fighting. What are the applications, the lessons from Black August for this moment? I mean, I see a lot of folks thinking that the philanthropy is going to fund their way out of this moment, or that banging pots is going to get us out of this moment. What would you say?
Listen, you know, I've been in the field with Cat Brooks. Let me start off by saying that. And I love my sister and my comrade. And, you know, we've been all over the place, up and down the West Coast. And I say this right here, this is about, resistance is about consistency. It's about humbling yourself and understanding, you know, the role not only of the flea, but the ant. You know, we talk about the dragon, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, Ho Chi Minh talked about, you know, when the prison gates fly open, the real dragon will fly. When prison gates open, the real dragon will fly out. And this is the year, as we talked about before, of the ant and the dragon. This is the year of the flea. So we understand that, you know, despite what all these folks who are trying to sell books and trying to sell films and trying to, you know, use their nonprofits to leverage popularity, so on and so forth, and the academias and all that, there won't be a revolution in the traditional sense here in the United States. It can't happen. This is a police state. We're clear about that. You know, the cop city is a microcosm of the macrocosm. We know that it's about militarized industry. It's about domination, control, death, so on and so forth. So to sum all that up, I say that it's all about our survival right now. How do we survive America? You understand what I'm saying? I'm in the country right now. When I say the country, I'm talking about like deep out in the country on my family's land right now. And, you know, I'm talking to them and I'm seeing what it is that we must do. All of the, we can march to we turn blue in the face, and I'm not knocking that.
Right.
But right now, what we're looking at, unfortunately, with our people, is more performative than realistic.
Right.
It's about how many likes you can get on the gram. It's about, you know, who digs the way you talk. I'm watching some of these folks be arrested, and it's like they're getting out like celebrity status. Mm-hmm. But then I look at someone like Michelle McGee, who was down for 67 years in prison, and the average person didn't even know his name. He's a co-defendant of Angela Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Stand up, stand. But the average person don't know his name. I look at people like Sekou Odinga, who's now an ancestor, who was responsible for the release of Assata Shakur, but his story's not sexy. You understand what I'm saying? So the average person don't know his name. Sundiata Kohli, who's 87, 88 years old, who was on the turnpike with Assata Shakur, but folks don't know his name. You understand what I'm saying? So right now, everything is about being cute.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, you know, and you know me well, so imagine me trying to not curse while I'm saying what I'm saying right now. But this whooping right here, right now, you can't cute your way out of it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You can't be sexy with this. This is war. It's straight up and down war. And until we are clear about that, until we understand that majority of these nonprofits that you see and running around right now, parading themselves, have them work for the state.
Mm-hmm.
They work for the state. This is game. No one's going to give you millions of dollars to fight them.
That part. And philanthropy money is blood money. Let's just be clear. And listen, APTP, take it. But I know what I'm taking.
You got to be clear. And what are you going to use it for? But there are a lot of these folks out here that's faking the funk. And they're making folks believe that they are something other than what they are. So they'll try to bury folks like us.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't bury me. You understand what I'm saying? As Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H. Rap Brown, would say, you didn't make us, so you can't break us. You know what I mean? So it's the war of the flea. It's the ant. It's the dragon that will ultimately defeat imperialism. You know what I mean? It's not a amount of dollars. You can't outbuy the people that create the paper.
We ain't got time to get into it, but I'm going to say something. I'm going to ask you one last question. There was a whole movement uplifted to erase people like us, but that is a different interview, sir.
Absolutely. All good.
But you know what I'm talking about.
All day.
So the party would have said, party did say, right, survive, because you said survival. I agree. Survival pending revolution. Kalonji, you say today is survival pending.
I think today is survival, period. There's no pending.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because of the fact, survival pending imperialism. It is about white fragility. It is about control. It is about domination, and that's all to it. It has nothing to do with, again, like I said, you know, I'm not knocking, you know, how anybody makes their money, so on and so forth. But the performative thing itself, it's heartbreaking when I'm going in and sitting down with folks like Mumia. It's heartbreaking when I'm watching Leonard Peltier, and of course I'm on his legal team, do 49 years in prison and still get out and have a lifetime of house arrest. You understand what I'm saying? So it is, you know, it's a sad reality, and I'm just you know, as the song would say, don't push because I'm close to the edge. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, it's all about our survival. It's all about being prepared. This being a 20-year commemoration of Katrina.
Yeah.
If we didn't learn anything from two decades ago.
Listen.
You know what I'm saying? When they blew up the levees, when folks couldn't survive water, when you got revolutionaries, quote unquote, laid up in the same Superdome as the people who are looking to them for safety. Mm. It's time for us to check ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And until we realize that, until we use our head, as my grandmother used to say, she used to say, you got to use your head for more than a hat rack. Until we use our head for more than a hat rack, we're going to be rolling around headless, man. We're going to be moving around like Ichabod Crane. You know what I'm saying? We're in bad shape. But we're going to win despite ourselves. I'm a hopelessly devoted lost soul. And as long as we still breathing and still breathing, we stand a chance.
All right, Brother Kalonji, I'm going to let you go to your family and your travels. Thank you so much for taking time out to holler at me and my listeners this morning. I appreciate you.
Gratitude. We appreciate you. Black August Resistance.
Black August Resistance, my brother.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.